And we are live. Welcome, folks. Good Monday morning to everyone and the start of a new week. And we're going to take off right out of the gate this week with kind of a, my granddad used to call a barn burner, right? He used to call that, we'd get kind of a drought. And for Pennsylvania, that's like 2.5 weeks without rain. And he'd start predicting that we would soon, somewhere in mid-August, get a barn burner storm. Meaning a big thunderstorm. So we're going to kind of take off like thunder today. We're going to be talking about the 8 biggest shifts, economic and technological shifts, that are already in motion. So none of these things are coming. They're already here. They're just further manifesting themselves. They're around us right now. They're happening right now, but they're going to accelerate and have a greater impact on society in the next 10 years than pretty much everything else. I'm not going to say everything else. I'm going to say pretty much these are the ones that are obviously on the radar right now, at least to the people who are paying attention. And I'll give you kind of the top level that we're going to be going through today right out of the gate, because some people say, oh, just say it. I'll say it, but there's a lot of explanation in each one of these. The death of the 40-hour job, that's on the board, and that's coming. AI disruption of white-collar work. I'm sure you saw that or something like it happening, but we're going to go into it in a way that we probably haven't yet, and we should have by now. The collapse of traditional education. This is more than the enrollment cliff. This is more than people pulling their kids out of school. It's all part of that, but there's way more to it than that. When there is a superior system available that costs less than what you currently have, people use it. And AI will plow right into that one. A lot of these are connected. Decentralized energy. More and more people will be installing solar on their roofs than any time in history. This is going to move really fast as we begin going forward with it. Supply chain fractures. We've learned nothing, so we have to learn now, and that's going to happen. And it already is happening. Tesla is an example of this, and in a way that most people don't realize yet. So is Samsung, and connected to Tesla, even though not officially. I'll explain when we get there. We also have de-dollarization and global realignment. And what I mean by de-dollarization isn't no more dollar or the death of the dollar like has been planned to you, promised to you for so long by all of the investment rags and things like that trying to get your money from you. It's just the dollar's not the only option anymore. And that's going to have major impacts globally. And it's a big part of why we have so many positioning things going on right now by the current administration, whether you love them or hate them. There's a reason they're doing what they're doing. We also have central bank digital currency push, which will have less effect on us in the U.S. than a lot of people around the world who don't have a lot of options to get the hell out of it, but it's still going to affect us, and it's kind of pushed back into the de-dollarization of things. Biotechnology and human enhancement, or CRISPR, and associated things. We'll go into that today. And then we're going to end the day with why you don't need to be aware of, you don't need to know all of it. You don't need to like pay attention nonstop to all of these things, but you need to be aware of them. And the reality is you can't ignore it and not get hurt if you have a career in front of you. If you're going to be retired by the year 2030 and you know you're going to be good, then you can ignore this stuff if you want to. There's a lot of things you can ignore when you no longer are tied to an income. If you're going to be tied to an income, if you're going to have a career to build, a business to build, you're going to need to know about these things because they are going to affect you in huge ways going forward. And remember, I said long ago, the decade from 2020 to 2030 would be the biggest decade of flux any living person has ever seen. I think that's coming to be true, but I think if I give it 5 more years and I just slide my prediction out to 25 to 35, it will be even more true. There's a lot of things that got impeded in the first few years of the 20s, and we all know why. And I will default to saying I think if that hadn't happened, a lot of this stuff would have moved a little bit quicker than it did. I think some of the things are actually accelerated by it, though. But we'll see as time marches on. Before we do that, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor today, number one today, is the Wealthsteading Podcast with John Pugliano. John is a prepper. He's one of us. He's an entrepreneur. He's former military. He's a ham radio operator. He grows a garden. He's exactly the kind of person that listens to this show every day. He's a contemporary of everybody in this community, but he's also an amazing investment manager. He's the kind of guy that instead of, I'm going to become an investment advisor by answering an ad in the paper and getting trained in relationship sales by like American Express or something like that, or Edward Jones, I'm actually going to learn the craft of investment management, make myself a liquid millionaire, and then and only then will I quit my job and go do it for others. It's exactly what he did, and he can help you learn how to do it for yourself with his podcast called The Wealth Studying Podcast. So check him out today at wealthstudying.com. Next up today is knifekits.com. They go about as far back as any sponsor we still have. I think I signed knifekits.com as a sponsor in 2010. Here it is, 2025, and they're still here 15 years. That's a long time to have someone support you in the business of podcasting. Check them out today. Knifekits.com does exactly what it says and says what it does. You can make knives from kits. That means that anybody, even me, can make a knife and come up with really great results. If you're a master bladesmith or going to the next level, they also have incredible raw materials. Mammoth tusk, buffalo bone, different types of material for making handles, both synthetic and real, or I should say organic. Just really cool stuff. Kydex sheath making equipment, leather sheath making equipment, even the equipment to make holsters, blue guns, things like that, all of it. Check them out today at knifekits.com. With that, let's go ahead and get on into today's topic, which again is these eight shifts. And I kind of like to come at subjects like this one, not particularly this one in of itself, but whenever we talk about technology moving forward, affecting the way that we live, the way we work, the way we earn, the way we solve our problems, the way we get information, all of it, I like to come at it from the term point of shift. We live in a world that is fueled by hype and rage bait. And if I wanted to be a more successful person in raw numbers, I would partake in it a hell of a lot more than I do, and I don't. It's far more important to me that I give you guys things that are tangible, that are real, that are based on reality, that you can apply in your life and build a better life. As I've said for 17 years now, if times get tough or even if they don't, I want the things I teach you to make you better off in an emergency, better off in a disaster, no matter whether it's local or state or global. It doesn't matter what it is. I want it to make your life better off when something goes wrong. But I don't want it to defer living and taking advantage of opportunities that are put in front of you. So when people start talking about the type of things we're going to talk about today, it's usually from one or two angles. Like when we talk about CRISPR at the end, which is gene editing, they're going to talk about that like it's going to make you live to be 140 years old, and it's the fountain of youth, and it's all just five more months, man. It's coming. You're going to be able to go to the doctor and get your genes edited like a machine. They're just going to take a gun and shoot you in the butt with it, and you're going to be better or whatever, right? Or it's Orwellian. They're going to use it to make you into a willing slave. And I'm not saying that either one of those things can happen. I'm saying that both of those things are very unlikely to happen, especially any time in the next 5 months, let alone 5 years. Well, the way I like to come at this from is exactly the term I use, which means a shift. And shifts are almost always feared. I guarantee you the first time some caveman somewhere figured out if I take these two things and strike them a certain way, a spark will come off and I can make fire on demand. There was some other older, wiser caveman, supposedly, that said we need to ban this technology because fire is dangerous. And if we use fire, everybody's going to die. Okay? Or some version thereof. And, you know, there's things that once that idea is out of the can, you can't put it back in. You can't make it go away. That's what all these things are. And so if we look at them as salvation, we are ignoring history. And if we look at them as oblivion, we're ignoring history. The idea that 90% of people's jobs are going to be replaced by AI in 10 years is one of the most preposterously stupid things I've ever heard in my life. There's never been a technology that's had that effect. In fact, the more advanced the technology of replacement, the more it's actually created an opportunity. And there's no reason to believe this will be any different. It also doesn't mean nobody gets hurt. It doesn't mean that nobody suffers. And it doesn't mean everything's going to be wonderful. So not the apocalypse does not equal heaven, right? Like you it doesn't have to be one extreme or the other. So let's kind of go into this. Let's talk about the death of the 40-hour job. Now, again, shifts. And when I say death, does that mean that in the year 2035, there won't be a single person on a 40-hour work week? It does not mean that. The death of the 40-hour jobs means that it will stop being the de facto standard by which all things are measured. Right now, if you were to go, you get out of high school, you go to college or trade school, military, whatever, but you're done with your school. You've moved away. You pick up your cell phone and you call up mama, you call up daddy, or you call up grandma, and you say, I got a new job. I found a job in my space. The first question, especially if it's your grandma, they're going to ask you, is it 40 hours a week? In other words, is it a full, or they'll say it this way, is it a full-time job, right? And if it is, it will get some level of implicit blessing. Because if you tell them, oh, it's 20 hours a week, that's just a part-time starter intern thing. Like, you still need a real job, youngin', right? That's how they would do it. But if it's 40 hours a week, in our mind, that's a legitimate job. And if you have someone that tells you they work 50 hours a week, you even have more respect for their job because it must be important they're paying you 10 hours a week overtime. Unless you're salary and have no bonus structure, then it just sucks. But if you tell somebody you work 36 hours a week, they discount that in their head, even if they don't tell you that. Even if it's because they're jealous, because they work 55 or whatever. But we're not going to keep doing this. And I think it's more about, it's a decline of job security and the rise of gig and freelance work. People are starting to realize that if I'm actually paid for the time of the work, I'll be paid more for the time that I'm working, then I can make more money in less time. And my overall, I can either make a lot more money by working just as much or just as much money by working less. So I'll give you two options. And just imagine you only really have two options in this scenario to help you mentally understand this. I'm going to offer you a job. It is a 40-hour-a-week job with benefits, okay? And it doesn't matter what the benefits are. Whatever those benefits are, like however much it saves you on your health insurance and you get a 401k and a certain number of days off, right? A certain amount of PTO. You can have that job, or you can have a job that is exactly the same work. The job that I'm going to give you, though, is going to take you on an average week 25 to 30 hours to finish your job. You're going to get paid such that at the end of the year, you will have made the exact same amount of money. Plus, in this gig job, you'll make enough overhead to fully cover the benefits that you don't get because you're a contractor. In other words, whatever the spread is in health insurance, you've got the money for that. You know, if you have to set up a Roth IRA or something and there was an employer match, there's enough money that you can just set it up and you can have your own employer match. You can set up as an S-Corp or an LLC, tax as an S-Corp, run a payroll on yourself, and at the end of the year, you're going to end up with the exact same money. Not more, not less, the exact same. But in one, you run your own thing. You get paid only when you're working. You're going to work 25 to 30 hours a week. In the other one, it's a conventional job. You end up in the same place economically, but you have to go to an office and you have to do what you're told when you're told to do it, and you're paid to be there versus paid for what you do. Which one are you going to take? Every person with a brain, right? Every person who's not looking for work to be a place that they escape home because they're miserable at home, just pick the first option. I can't even see a reason that you would pick the second option other than security. Well, the veil of security is falling. So since the security's not there, and in the end, the two jobs pay the same, and one gives you 10 hours a week of your life back with less oversight, you're going to take that one. When I say the death of the 40-hour-a-week job, that's what I mean. The de facto standard is going to be something more akin to option one than option two. Tech-enabled income stacking and lifestyle design play into this because your other option is, well, what if you could have two of those jobs and work 50 hours a week from home instead of going to an office? So you have two clients, each paying you a full-time salary like we just described. But because you can do your work from home, because you can multitask and have like four screens up, and I actually know people that have been doing this for over a decade now, and provide these services, maybe you'll work 50 hours, but you'll double your income and have complete freedom. And you'll take back the overtime of 10 hours doesn't count, because most people spend at least 10 hours a week commuting if they go somewhere. So you don't have to leave the house except to go do things you want to do. You work from home, you have flexible time. You work twice as hard, but you get twice the money and twice the freedom. That's another way that this is going to be, that you can stack these functions and you can be doing multiple things for multiple people. So we're going to go more into people that have clients, because what most people don't realize, that's what you are already. You are a professional contractor with a client. It's just that most people have a single client with what you would call like a time and materials contract, right? Like when I was in structured cabling, we would bid a job, and that job would be, hey, we're going to put in 140 workstations, four drops per workstation. Here's the materials we're going to use. Here's how long we think it's going to take, and here's a price, right? And that was a bid job. And people understand bid jobs. They understand how that works, that it's basically, it's all on you. If you fall short, you lose money. You still got to get the work done. Where if you had a time and materials job, it would be like I had a contract with Aetna that we sent texts to them for $85 an hour to do whatever they needed to do. And if a job was going to take more than a certain number of hours, it had to be approved by an on-site contact. But basically, it was always approved because they wanted it done. And materials would be at cost plus 20. And so you have one client on a time and materials job, and it's the same work every week, and it's a 40-hour job. We're talking about moving to a place where you have multiple clients. You provide multiple services or the same services to multiple clients. Employers are shifting to output over hours. Like the metric for measuring employee performance by the hour only works in a assembly line style business where there's if that person works an hour, there's a baseline output that if they're not meeting it, they're fired. And there's a optimum output, and then there's like a rock star output. And if I have that environment, I have a warehouse, products come in the back, orders come in for distribution, packers and movers and pickers pull product and shove it out the other side, I can totally manage that business based on hours that the employee works. And if the employee's there, I know the output. As soon as you move past that to anything that requires individual moving parts, if the person can get up from their desk and go take a dump at 10 o'clock in the morning without asking somebody, on the way back, stop at the coffee thing and talk to somebody for 10 to 15 minutes before they get back to doing what they're supposed to be doing, and nothing happens if they do that, and the next day they could skip it altogether, and the next day they could double the time they did that, and it, nothing happens, then I can no longer manage an employee based on their time at work. It's impossible. And it's been that way in most positions forever, and it's what's led to what we call quietly quitting. These are all the people that have jobs that are not really necessary and nobody's figured it out or held them accountable to it yet. But companies are learning this and they're switching, and AI is going to play part of that. We'll get to that next. But what is the opportunity? Each one of these eight, I want to give you what the opportunity for you is in it. This is your opportunity to build work around your life instead of your life around your work. That's the best way that I can put it. Once you clearly define your value, and instead of looking for a job, you look for clients to market your services to, even if it looks like a job, even if it's a single client and it technically is a job. As soon as you start seeing it that way, then you start structuring everything that you're willing to say that you can do for somebody based on output versus hours. Once you get in that mode, it's an understanding between you and that employer. Now, if you're doing something like you take phone calls, and then you have to be available during a certain hourly framework, that still applies. But other than that, if I'm saying I want X widgets produced a week from a person, I want all the service tickets answered as they come in every week. I want, this is what I want, whatever I want is. And it pays Y, X actions pay Y dollars. I do not give a flaming fiddler's fart how you do it. especially if you don't come to an office. All I care is that the output equals the expectation, and it would be even better if the output exceeded the expectation, which now became the new minimum standard and what you'll be held to. And once you've developed that, the ability to provide your client, your employer, that return, they leave you alone. And that means if you want to knock off 2 hours to go see your kid practice, you know, because they're fixing to go on the road with a traveling team for baseball, then you do it. But it's up to you to make sure if you do that, you can cover it for yourself. That's just one example of how this is going to work. Moving on, AI disruption of white-collar work. AI is going to disrupt a lot of things, but it's going to hit white-collar more than anything else. And it's really coming from the pointless jobs first. The pointless necessary jobs. What is a pointless necessary job? Well, it actually works really well to be staffed the way I just described in the death of the 40-hour job. The pointless necessary job is a job that has this person sitting at a desk or a workstation or some location 40 hours a week, and what they do for you really takes them about 15 hours to do a week. But no one will take the job as a 15-hour a week part-time job, and the person needs to be available on demand. In other words, I know that they're going to do nothing on Tuesday, and they might do nothing on Wednesday, and they'll definitely do something on Thursday, but I might need them on Wednesday, and I need to have them. There's a lot of jobs like this. There's a lot going on with these videos right now. All these women are putting on like TikTok and Snapchat and shit of their jobs, and 90% of their job is what they wear and what they fucking eat, okay? Those jobs, people call it adult female daycare, right? And I think that females are getting a bad rap for it because there's a lot of men with jobs like this too. I'm just saying. Just we don't make videos of like what we wore that day and call it a cute commute or whatever and pictures of us eating at our desk and shit, right? And pretending that it was hard. There's a lot of jobs like that. Those jobs are the kind of job that almost always has somebody that has four or five of those people reporting to them. That's the number one way those jobs function. You have some sort of supervisory manager, middle manager, whatever, and he's got four or five direct reports. And it's his job to make sure those people are all tasked, and the accountability he always has is his output. And if his output from his team equals the expectation of his boss, all is well, and he leaves everybody alone, including farting around at the coffee maker. It doesn't matter, right? Well, a lot of those jobs now, what's going to happen is that dude, that guy with the four direct reports or five direct reports, he's going to have nobody. He's going to have an AI agent to replace his people. Or he's going to have one person and him and an AI agent working between them, and they're going to flatten that organization. That's how those jobs will be eliminated. The need for a human isn't going anywhere, but the need is going to go from maybe we need six humans for this role to two, plus an AI tool or suite of AI tools. That is going to be a massive shift. Solo operators now rival full teams. Some of the work that I do now, and I believe it's resulted in a better quality podcast, I literally cannot do on my own. And now I can't, and I can actually do the same. I can do the same show prep more than I ever could before and still less time. It takes me less time to produce a show with more research and more development in it than it used to from these tools. And we are in the, be aware of this. We are in the infancy of these tools. Many of the problems these tools have, they're being worked through. They're being improved. It's not like the companies doing it are not aware of the problems. And it's not like they want the problems to be there. They want to sell more, right? They want their tools used more, and they want to win. And there's a lot of competition in this space, so that will only continue. And human AI collaboration is going to become the new baseline. Most jobs, yeah. Now, I mean, if your job is to run a trencher and put plastic pipe in the ground connected to sprinklers and hook it up to a control unit and install sprinkler systems, you're probably good for a while. But most jobs that are, you know, thinking level jobs, human intelligence level jobs, if you're not capable of collaborating with AI in the next 5 years, you're done. Because as these organizations flatten, there's going to be intense competition to not be one of the people being flattened. And the person that's the early adopter who has demonstrated capability with this tool may be the one replacing his former manager who was resistant to it, right? And there's a danger, too, of your work going through your manager looking like your manager did it. So it's going to be important that we find ways to differentiate ourselves. The opportunity in this, though, is using AI to scale your output. Whatever you're doing, you should be asking yourself every day, how can AI help me do this? And if you don't know how AI can help you do this, here's the frickin' super secret squirrel way to figure it out. Go ask AI how it can help you do the things that you do. Go tell AI, this is my job. This is what I do every day. This is what I'm expected to do. This is what my boss thinks I do really well. This is what my boss thinks I do okay. And these are the things that my boss thinks I do poorly. Be honest about that. How do I use you to do a better job for him or her? And how do I use you to do a better job for my company? Just ask. And what did we talk about last week? The interview process. You give it that assignment and then say, you give it a role. You are an expert in my field. Well, as much as you can flesh out about that. Now ask me 5 qualifying questions one at a time before you give me your recommendations as to how I can use AI to improve my position where I am right now. See, I'm giving you the codes. I'm a guy that's going to be building and selling AI courses for a while because I like doing it. And I think I can go further by making it more sculpted for you. And I have a surprise for you today that I'm going to give you for free that's in that vein. But I'm also willing to tell you how to do it yourself. And I'm willing to do that because there's a lot of people like, if somebody already figured it out, I'd rather pay them a few bucks than figure out how to do it myself. But that's how you do it yourself. Just go ask. Go ask the unit how it can help you. And then remember, sometimes it's wrong, sometimes it hallucinates, and it wants to please you. So you always have to temper it with your own knowledge. This is why AI is not taking over the world. Because it is flawed. And no matter how much they make it work, it's always going to be flawed compared to what a human can do. It's a tool, right? We have automated excavators that can run like a robot, but they can't do things that a human can do. If you know, I want this thing to be, if you can drop it into a CAD printout and overlay it with GPS, it can shape exactly what you want. If anything really needs to be made decisions on the fly right now, that shit's been around 20 years. It still doesn't work for that. That's how this is going to be, right? Grok told me to ship eggs in the mail. You can ship eggs in the mail, Aaron. That's great. That's great. Good advice. Though Grok is probably my least favorite AI tool for LLMs right now. I'm not saying it's going to stay that way, but right now I am unimpressed with Grok compared to Gemini or ChatGPT. Just saying. Moving on. The collapse of traditional education. This is where I have a surprise for you that I'll be giving out today. So degrees are losing value against skills, and it's because we marketed bullshit for so long that sooner or later we had to, you know, you want to dance, you got to pay the fiddler, and the fiddler has his hand out, and he wants his freaking money. And what I mean by that is we have run this gamut of market that everybody should go to college, make loans easily available to stupid people who shouldn't be in college in the first place, convince them that the loan is immaterial to their life. It doesn't matter how much it costs. They're always going to make more money with a degree than if they don't have a degree, and it will more than cover the cost of the loan. Get a degree in any, if you don't know what you want to do, get a degree in anything. It doesn't matter. All degrees have incredible value, and education is priceless. That's what we've marketed for a solid 50 years. And we've really marketed hard, I mean hardcore, for 40. From the 80s forward, that became the mantra, the message. By the mid-90s, when you were in high school, the message you were getting, even if it wasn't directly said this way, is anybody that don't go to college is a loser that's going to end up scrubbing toilets for the rest of their life. It's never been true, but it was the message. And children are very subject to the message from teachers and leaders in schools. And when you add in TV saying this and radio saying this and mom and dad being conditioned to say this, it just becomes a default. And that's what it became. And that created a surplus of degrees, and a surplus of anything reduces demand. I mean, while you were getting your economics degree, right, in college, they should have explained to you how the law of supply and demand affected your degree you were getting. When I go to interview people for a job and 8 out of 10 people have a degree, my value of the degree just dropped through the floor while the cost of the degree has gone way, way up. But employers are demanding more of a shift to like a proof of work. I'm way more concerned about what you've done and what you can do than what you were taught that you could do but haven't done yet, right? I mean, anybody with a brain would think that way. Anybody, I want you to start thinking about it like it's your money, not coming in, going out. You're going to hire someone to do a job at your house. Let's say put a roof on your house. And one of the contractors has gone to all the schools, has all the certifications, but has actually done two roofs in his life. The other guy got out of high school. His uncle had run a roofing company for 40 years. He went to work for his uncle for 5 years. After 5 years, his uncle wanted to retire. He went and borrowed money from the bank and bought the company. He now owns and operates the company that his uncle built and tutored him on for 5 years. And he's been doing it for another year. And they both want the same money to do the same job. Who are you hiring? See, as soon as it's your money going out, all those fancy credentials doesn't mean jack diddly shit anymore, does it? That's how employers think, and they're thinking more and more this way. So learning paths need to not only help you learn, they need to lead to action. And you need to be, even if you don't have a job, you need to be building a CV of projects that you can demonstrate to a prospective employer, this is what I can do. I've already built these things. I've already done these things. I've already implemented this. Right? This is the new way of things. It really is. And student debt is now becoming what it always was, but it's becoming this in the minds of people, a liability. If I would have told you student debt is a liability 20 years ago, and I guess 17 years ago I did, the pushback I got from that was amazing. I have not changed my message on this subject in 17 years of podcasting, and I was heavily public speaking for at least 10 years before that. And if it came up in a talk, it's the same message that I've been doing it for 27 years. This the same message. And I can tell you 15, 20 years ago, when I said student debt was a liability, the pushback was immense. The talking points came out. Everybody was trained. And education is priceless. Every child, I mean, like, but you don't understand. And we've run the numbers and the experts say and all of it. And now when I say it, mostly what I get is, yeah, huh, yeah, mm-hmm. Everybody knows that. Student loan, that's why they turned it into a political pugil stick of who's gonna pay off your debt for you, even though you're the one that incurred it. That's why it became that, because people now know it's a liability. So that doesn't help the person that's sitting on $120,000 in debt with a degree in communications, or worse, gender studies or bitterness studies or basket weaving or whatever French literature from the 14th century or whatever the hell else it is. But it does help the person that doesn't have the debt yet go, I don't think I'm going to take this path. But more, what we have now is an opportunity to learn on demand and prove value through results. And this goes right back into the last one of AI. Right now, you have the ability to sit down with an AI unit and not learn from the AI unit, develop a learning plan for a specific skill and a specific niche for anything, and accelerate your learning and go further and faster in a month than college can take you in a year of practical, hands-on, real-world, applicable knowledge. And that's my present for you guys today. It's not perfect. I would not sell it the way that it is. but it is the first pass at a 15-day course in how to use GPT or any AI unit to develop your own learning plan. And you could do it in, I don't know, 15 hours or honestly, probably 2-3 hours the first time. I only set it up as a daily thing, so it's like 10 minutes of work a day to make it easy. And the purpose of it isn't to teach you how to do X. It's to teach you how to develop a learning plan to learn X, no matter what X is. X becomes an infinite variable. You want to learn how to do PHP programming linked to a MySQL database? It'll work. Right? If you want to learn how to grow mushrooms, it'll work. You want to learn how to flip real estate? It'll work. You want to learn how to flip raw land? It'll work. You want to learn how to make websites? It'll work. You want to make web apps? It'll work. You want to learn how to reload equipment? It'll work. You want to learn how to tie flies? It'll work. Have I made the variability enough for you yet? I built it all out. I spun it into a PDF. I'll upload it. And when the audio version of this podcast goes out about 30 minutes after the live stream ends, you'll be able to download it for free and use it. It doesn't cost you anything. You don't have to hop into a form or nothing like that. I thought about saying, you know, it's going to go out in the Daily Mail or something like that. The hell with it. You just have it. I'll probably refine it. I'll probably turn it into something that takes more like 20 days to do, but or 20 steps, right? Even if I, and I'll probably sell it for, I don't know, 10 bucks or something in the future and give it to MSB. I'm thinking about rolling some things out like this and just put them in MSB, and they're all free to MSB members. And then anybody else can buy them for $9 off Jack's Laws or something like that. But I'm going to give that to you for free. And it's the template to do. And I guarantee you, since it's a first pass, there's some flaw in it. You'll find it. And I guarantee you that, like, there's a way to tailor it better for a technological path versus a hard skill path versus a philosophical path. This is as generic as I can make it, so it's as universal as possible. But once, I think if you try this, just pick something you want to learn. Don't worry about if it's for your profession or your work. If it's just for fun, might even be the best first step at it. And develop an entire block of learning and then proceed through it. And once you understand that, once you unlock that power, because we've talked about YouTube University for years, but let's face it, you go to YouTube and you're like, how do I grow oyster mushrooms? And then you end up picking the one with the guy that looks like the NPC logo with the guy, all right, like pointing at something, like all of the videos. Like it's that's what it's all become. What if there was a tool that would research and find you the best experts so you already knew exactly what you were looking for and then actually help you take written content, turn it into verbal content in a conversational manner and present it back to you in podcast form like Notebook LM and then develop quizzes for you so you could test your knowledge? Once you understand how powerful that is, you'll become a polymath because everything that interests you, you'll just say, I'm going to dedicate the next 2 weeks of my life to becoming very informed about this one thing. And you'll have a blueprint for it. And even though like the first time you go through it, you'll probably have to like diverge from exactly what I said, come up with your, once you come up with your process, right? And you develop your own template for it. Oh, I want to learn what variable is X? Change a couple words in your initial prompts and start going. And the next thing you know, it's not GPT telling you what you want to hear. It's GPT developing a lesson plan for you that is specific to what you want to do and what you want to learn only. That is, and it could be like a 101 level. And then, you know what? I got enough out of this. I'm going to go learn something else. This or I'm in. Like then you can develop like the 201, the 301, and the 401, and you can accelerate your learning and your capability so quickly. If that's what universities are going to be competing with, and they already are, it's just nobody's aware of it yet. When I say nobody, I don't mean, well, obviously you are. I just told you. Obviously I am. I just said it. When I say nobody, I mean the number of people aware that that's what this technology can actually do for you is less than 1% of the general population. Once it's 10%, forget it. It's an avalanche. And that is coming and coming very, 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 very fast. Next up, though, is decentralized energy. I think you're going to see a shitload more residential solar and battery adoption, you know, the panels and the Tesla walls and all that, the price of that is going to keep getting driven down. And the price directly correlates to the cost of the purchase of energy from a centralized source. In other words, what is expensive now could not go down in price. But as inflation continues to go up, if the base price of it doesn't go up and the cost of energy goes up, what was expensive becomes break even and money saving very, very quickly as that spread increases. And what I think you have, and I'm going to save some of this for the next part on supply chains, is you have companies that are being very innovative like Tesla, and everybody thinks Tesla's making batteries and driving down the cost of batteries so they can drive down the cost of Tesla cars so they can sell Tesla cars. And they don't realize the Tesla car is a hamburger and the battery is real estate, and we're talking about Ray Kroc and McDonald's. And I'll just give you that now. I'm going to punt that to the supply chain area that we're going to go to next. Let that start kicking around in your brain. There is a lot of concern about grid instability. And the problem with grid-tied solar is that without battery, when the grid goes down, you have nothing. You have nothing. But if you have batteries and solar and grid-tied, you now last. You have, like, if the power goes out for an hour or so, you probably don't care. And if it goes out for an hour or so during the day while you're still making power from your solar panels off the roof, you really don't care. And it's better in every way than a generator. It doesn't break down like a generator does. It doesn't have problems like a generator does. It's not a mechanical thing like generator does. Richard Hoffman says Tesla's producing tiny homes with a power wall already. They're selling you a tiny home. It already has power. You drop it where it is, power's there. It's got batteries. It's got panels. Tesla's also, you know, been big on hyping the roof, the Tesla solar roof, which is where the panels are integrated into the shingles. I'm not sure that's ever going to take off because shingles wear out and panels wear out. So the one good thing about putting solar on your roof, it actually extends the life of your roof when it's done right because the panels cover the shingles. You know, but most solar experts will actually tell you don't put the panels up on the roof. Sean Mills, it's probably 1 in 10 designs where he says, yeah, put them on the roof for this. I think that's going to change too. I think the technology is going to get more suited to putting on roofs because it's where most people are going to do it because most of Sean's jobs are for homesteaders, and homesteaders like this thing called acreage, but most homeowners have these things called lots, and there's not a lot of room on the lots for lots of panels. That's why they go on the roof, and that's going to continue. And local microgrids will probably start replacing central control the more this happens. There'll be more and more opportunities if you get a certain amount of penetration into a neighborhood to create a centralized additional battery backup system that acts like a substation, but for that particular group of people. We already have things like this that go on with wind generation and co-ops, but I see this becoming much more fragmented and maybe even becoming something that cities start encouraging and subsidizing in some way. But I think we are going to get to a point where your power company will pay half the price of your power wall. There's already been some test plans where they did that, and then it kind of went away for a while, but it will come back. And the reason is simple. If I'm a power company, I'd rather build the backup infrastructure distributed at the customer premise where the customer becomes at least partially or fully responsible for it, because it impacts that one customer more than anybody else. And paying for half your power wall cost me less than the same amount of storage at a central facility. So it just costs me less to subsidize you than it does to build it for myself. And if yours breaks, one's broken. If something happens to my central facility, I have a much bigger problem. So I think a lot of that is going to go, and then there, the Lion's Den has it. Then sell excess through local partnerships. Boom, exactly. So you have these little co-op type electrical distributed networks forming, and co-op A today has a surplus and co-op B has a deficiency, And instead of buying it from the utility provider, Co-op A sells it to Co-op B. And if there's a surplus from everybody in that general area, then they sell it collectively back to the power company who sells it outbound. There's a lot of things like that that are coming more and more so as we move on. The opportunity is to turn your home into a powerhouse asset instead of a power liability. The reality is that most people have no backup plan for a power outage at all. And the second the power runs out, they start sweating or freezing and worrying about the food in the refrigerator and freezer. Where we can actually turn around and make the home into a power generation machine, that if we cut our electric bill, that's great. But if we do it exactly right, we might end up actually making some money off of it. Especially if we pair it up with an electric vehicle that's basically adding another power wall in reserve. And if that electric vehicle is then capable of, when we're not using it, effectively being an Uber or Lyft driver for us with nobody in the driver's seat, and that is coming, that is part of the Tesla plan, and they're not the only ones that are going to do it. But I'm going to move on to the supply chain now. Global shipping delays are becoming normalized. A lot of things that we used to get just, it seemed like on demand, right? You know, a lot of things that we used to buy that, you know, Amazon had it to your house in 1-2 days, it's happening less now. More and more things are now happening. It feels a little more like the 90s than the 2020s in some ways with supply. And the other side of it is that we really realized how bad this situation is during COVID. Now, we didn't do much about it, right? Trump talks a lot about reshoring manufacturing, what have you, and I hope it happens, but we don't really gain much from reshoring manufacturing from a supply chain side if the raw materials are made somewhere else and then shipped here and assembled here. That does give us jobs, right? And it changes the import-export component to in a positive way. I'm not saying there's no benefit, but I'm saying if we start making more of our antibiotics in Ohio, right, because Ohio is probably not going to have an embargo placed on it or a tariff problem or something like that, that's great. But if we still get the materials and all they're really doing in Ohio is quality assurance and putting two different powders mixed together at a specific rate in a capsule, we haven't really done anything to reduce our dependence on China for antibiotics, which are a critical medicine that we would need at a time of war, when the most likely nation that we'd end up in a large-scale conflict with is either China or somebody China's allied with. And they may not want to provide us that because it would weaken us in that capacity. We haven't done anything about that. We haven't done anything at all. So we're going to have to start doing more things like that and reshoring more production and building more local production to deal with this problem. In other words, this is not a solution that's coming because of a technological innovation. This is a long-term festering problem that after 50-plus years of fiat monetary system and global conflict is manifesting itself in a way that is requiring us to do something about it. And, of course, we will use the technological innovations that are available to address the problem, if that makes sense. So AI is a technological innovation that's causing movement. This is movement that's causing the adoption of a technological innovation. The opportunity, or I would say before that, one of the other things we have to do is we have to do more strategic stocking. This is the return of the warehouse. Right now, the warehouses have been decimated. Pretty much you have Amazon warehouses, Walmart warehouses, Costco warehouses, and then logistical warehouses that primarily serve Walmart, Costco, and Amazon. And I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding. They just built one about 5 miles from my house down by the highway, about 10 miles from my house down by the highway. Everybody thought it was going to be an Amazon facility. I don't even remember the name of the company. This thing is, it's probably a couple square miles under roof. It's three stories, and it's acres in footprint. Okay? So I'm saying there's probably a couple square miles under roof in there. It's a logistics company. And when I looked up, everybody thought it was going to be an Amazon warehouse. We're like, man, there's one over there and there's one over there. Why would you build another one? But what else could it be? Well, it turns out it's a logistics company, which means a warehouse for warehouses. And their number one client is Amazon. Their number two client is Walmart when I looked them up. Yeah, you see what I'm saying? But when we, as we need more of this, then that's more product on the ground domestically and regionally to address international shipping, whether the product's being made overseas or not. We're going to have more here. This also evens out, you know, more madman syndrome, Trump or somebody like Trump in the future with all these crazy tariffs. These things always have lead ups, and it would enhance the ability to do what everybody did when the tariffs started, which is the reason you saw some prices go up and the excuse being tariffs, but it was all bullshit. There wasn't a single thing you bought that was really impacted by actual tariffs because most of them never went into effect. But the other thing they did where it looked real, they ordered the people that knew they had supply side issues were coming and that they would be able to sell what they're already selling. They just bought a shitload before the tariffs went into effect, got them imported, and stockpiled them. And that's another reason our GDP jumped so damn much earlier this year, because that happened, because that is spending activity, right? And that's all GDP really is how much money we spend. Gross domestic product, it sounds like we produce something. It's how much money we spend in reality. The opportunity here is create or support small batch local production, or even things that are larger scale, figuring out what role you can play as an entrepreneur or as an employee in affecting this issue, because this issue is not going anywhere. This issue is also why things have gone on like there's no official agreement between Tesla and Samsung, okay? Samsung is the largest manufacturer of chips in the world. And Samsung is building a facility, if it's not already done, I don't think it's done yet. One of my best friends was the lead project manager on that facility for a time and decided he'd had enough of it, went off to do some other things recently. So I'm not as up to date on the status of that place now. But this same person was the head project manager that built the Tesla Gigafactory. And he went from finishing the Gigafactory in Austin to managing the process for the Samsung factory in Austin. And he took a whole shitload of people with him when he did it. And you have to sit back and go, it's very obvious that one of the largest buyers of chipsets going forward is going to be Tesla and other Elon Musk companies, period. SpaceX, Optimus Robots, Tesla self-driving vehicles, all of it. And then they both build two of the largest manufacturing facilities ever built in the United States, a stone's throw away from each other. I'm sure that was all just a coincidence, right? I'm sure there's no planning on making Austin the new Silicon Valley. That's totally not what's happening, right? That's not it. It's not that. Come on, can't be that simple, can it? That there's a concerted move by the actual productive billionaires in the world to realize that California has gone completely to shit, that while they're still the talent hub, they're a talent hub where the talent can't use their talent. If I want to build a facility in Texas and I have all the money, I can buy land today and break ground tomorrow. Literally. It's that easy. I'm not exaggerating. It will take me 18 months after I buy the land of begging for permission, maybe to break ground in California. A year and a half in this type of space, it's just untenable. Income tax in Texas, zero. Income tax in California, highest in the country. Regulations in Texas, minimal. Designed to be a pro-business environment. Regulations in California, meh. Okay, now here's where all these mesh. California is a talent hub. Those people know more. They have more experience, whatever. Okay, so if I can get a good engineer in Texas versus a great one in California, I'm already ahead. I can train that engineer. But now I go, Mr. Engineer, here's all your suite of AI tools. Oh, shit. Oh, shit, California, you have a problem. You know, Houston, we have a problem? No. Sacramento, we have a problem, right? There's a problem for you. Your regulation, your onerous taxation, your anti-business environment is now the last thing you had was a better talent pool. Talent is portable for money. And as companies pull out, that talent has nothing to do. It either sits there or it leaves, or it works remotely for the company in Texas, which I'm going to tell you right now, Texas companies are going to be like, yeah, we don't want remote workers from New York or California. We've talked about the tax issues as to why. Anybody else? Yeah, you're free and welcome. I mean, that is what is going to happen. A lot of people want to leave California is what Crystal's saying, and she's right. Well, a lot of people don't leave because they don't think they can get the kind of job they have in California somewhere else, so they feel like they're stuck. There's the normal reasons. My family's here and all that, and this won't fix that. But there's a point where people go, so wait a minute, I can go make $20,000 less a year in Texas and increase the size of my house by 1,000 square foot and still have more money? I think I'm going to Texas. That's what happens. This is where y'all start the shit about voting in the policies. There's nothing to be done about that. This is a weather forecast, guys. This is not what I think should happen. This is what's going to happen. And it's already been happening. And that's why all you got to do to see this, price a U-Haul. From L.A. to Dallas, one way. Then price a U-Haul from Dallas to L.A., one way, and look at the price difference. And there's a simple reason. If you rent the vehicle in Dallas and you go out one way to L.A., they know that vehicle's coming back. They know somebody's going to walk into whatever U-Haul dealership you drop it off and need one to go to Texas soon. That's going to happen. They know when that thing goes from Dallas to L.A., it's a different situation, right? When it goes from LA to Dallas. When it goes from LA to Dallas, it may never come back. You end up having to pay somebody to fly out there and drive the thing back, maybe with a tow bar and pull one behind it, because your inventory of available vehicles out here is in decline. And that's true. U-Haul rider, you check it out and see what I'm saying. So that's just going to get ramped up with this whole situation. But there's an opportunity here for you to figure out where you fit in it. And again, AI plays a role in it. And then AI can also help you figure out how you can play a role in that space. Ask it. Ask it to interview you about your capabilities, your training, your knowledge, and what you're willing to do. And ask it if you're interested in that space. How can you help me get into this space? You might be surprised at the answer. I don't know what it's going to tell you. I'm not you. Then de-dollarization and global realignment. The BRICS nations are not going away. There were a lot of people, I think, that thought BRICS would be much bigger than it is by now. And it's not. It's going to move slowly. But those nations have a huge incentive now to get off the dollar as much as possible. And every time the United States imposes sanctions, it's more impetus to get off the U.S. dollar. And if you think about it, what we do is incredibly immoral, right? This is where I'm going to go a little bit into my opinion here, right? But I find it very immoral that basically the United States has ramrodded the dollar as the petrodollar into every nation and made it a nation that doesn't do business in dollars is at a massive disadvantage to if they do so. And we enforce that with violence and a blue water navy and both a combination of hard and soft power across the world. But then as soon as somebody steps outside of the box we want them in, we impose sanctions and make it difficult for them to do business in dollars, because that's all sanctions really ends up being. Is if we sanction you, it's harder for you to do business in dollars with this person over here. And if this person over here does business with you, then we sanction them, but it all comes back to our control of the dollar. It's pretty sick and twisted when you think about it. And a lot of these nations are figuring out we don't need to do business in dollars. And the amount of business done in dollars as a percentage of global GDP has been in continuous decline for a long time. That's going to speed up. Gold, Bitcoin, and real assets are gaining favor with average everyday investors. Do you know that about 1 in 5 people in America today have some Bitcoin? 1 in 5. Now, a lot of people have $500 or $300 or something, but you know, getting to 20% is a pretty big deal. And the thing about that is the person that only bought $500 worth and is now looking at $1,500 in value, it starts to hit them in the head what this really is. And if they don't do anything, that $1,500 is probably going to be worth $3,000 in, let's say, a year or two. Again, this is a why am I putting my money in a CD? Why am I holding a bond when this Bitcoin thing does this? And once they figure out a retirement strategy where they can borrow declining value dollars against appreciating value Bitcoin, it's game on. So while these foreign nations are incentivized to get off the dollar because of our imposed sanctions, domestically companies and people are being incentivized to get off the dollar because the dollar is toxic. It is a leaking battery. And we know that every time there's a problem, they will make the hole bigger and the leak faster. That's what's going on. So the only thing you can really do right now is hold on to durable long-term commodities as a battery for storage of your wealth. And when you buy, people say, well, what about stocks? Right? When you buy a stock, when you buy an ETF that's a basket of stocks, that's the same thing you're doing. You're holding ownership in a company or group of companies. And the rich always have done this, is you build up a portfolio of assets with real value, and you never sell it, and you borrow against it. And the other side of the equation, this is something that people just don't realize at all is being done to you, is they taught you to do it halfway. They taught you to do it halfway. And this gives them a guarantee of new money coming in to support the base price of their assets, okay? And then it gave them a guarantee that you would piecemeal sell off all the assets you spent your whole life acquiring in the last 15 to 25 years of your life, and that they would buy it from you with money that they obtained by borrowing against the assets they already had and adding your asset to their pile. That's what they do. Right? So you're taught, you're trained by the people that come into work that work for giant financial companies. You need to put 10% of your money in your 401k and your employer will match 5% or whatever the fuck it is. And you just need to do that your whole life and then you can retire. And your retirement plan is always liquidate your assets. And we've built a mindset in humanity that whatever you don't spend before you die, most of the time when your children inherit it, they're going to sell it. No matter what they do, they're gonna disperse of the assets that you built. And who do you think's buying it? You think the same people that trained you to do that shit? That's who's you're spending your entire life to acquire assets for maybe 10 decent years of retirement, where you sell them all back to the people that sold them to you in the first place, and they can buy yours with leverage. That's the whole system. Well, people are catching on to this. And realizing, hey, I can play that game too. Instead of bitching about the rich, why don't you be like the rich? And maybe you'll be rich, or at least less poor. That's where people are moving with this. And inflation and volatility are the new norm. Like this, it will not get any better than it has been in the past. It will get worse. The devaluation will continue and it will accelerate. And it's both the inflation and the volatility of the prices of goods and services, pinched by the supply chain issues that we already covered. Then there's going to be this huge push for a central bank digital currency. See, I think what most people don't understand about bureaucrats is if a bureaucrat could, there would be nothing you could do without approval. The average bureaucrat, that's how they think, that they're better than you, they're smarter than you, and they need to control you. And I'm talking about top-level bureaucrats. Like if you took the 50 top bureaucrats in any nation, they would all want it down to the level. If you're going to dig a hole in your own front yard, you should probably have to ask permission from somebody first. Maybe not me. My God, I'm way above holes. I'm way smart. But somebody should make sure that the hole is proper. It's not too deep. It's not too wide. That all the dirt goes back the right way. They want to regulate and control everything. It's a big part of why they've tried to convince you that food that's not for humans is for humans, because all of the food that fits that description is commodity food that can be stored long term, that can be quantified, that can be controlled in movement, and that can be taxed every time that it moves. Corn, soy, wheat, right? Potato, to a lesser degree, but pretty big, same. Potato, barley, lentils, legumes. All this shit, it is something that can be put in a giant silo, quantified and known. the goal of government is to quantify, know, and control everything. It's its purpose. It's its function. It's like a living, breathing entity. And when it runs out of things to control, it's like, I need more. And it wants more to control. And that's a big part of what's going to drive this desire for a central bank digital currency. Because now they can just say, you're spending your money wrong. Oh, we don't like the way you're spending your money. We're just going to change your money so it can only be spent on these things for the next 3 weeks. Don't worry, it's only 3 weeks. But if you don't spend it in 3 weeks on these things, it'll go away. But don't worry, it's only 3 weeks. And then if you tie it to something like a social credit score, all those things, it's not like somebody's sitting there going, oh, look, Richard's an asshole. He can't buy any more of these things this week. And no, it's all done by computers and algorithms, just analyzing spending and behavior and who said you were a good boy and who said you were a bad boy and where you can rent an apartment and where you can't, which train you can get on and which train you can't. It's already being done in China. It's already a part of daily life in China, and it is supercharged by a CBDC that doesn't even worry about whether you can or you can't go to a place. It's whether they can or they cannot accept your money. I liken it to this. I think they changed it recently. It's like 10 o'clock now. But in Texas, they have these stupid, archaic blue laws that are, some of them are still around. Now, if you go back long enough, and when I was a little kid, some of this was a place, it'd be like, you can't buy like soap and shampoo on a Sunday. Like, that was how stupid some of this was. And some of the archaic shit that we have right now is like, a car dealership cannot be open on Sunday in Texas. Now, the real thing is it can't be open both Saturday and Sunday. So all the dealerships got together and said Sunday is the day none of us will open. It's kind of like a gentleman's agreement. So there's no car dealerships open on Sunday. This is dumb because the number one time people have to shop for a car is when they're not working, so that would be weekends. And this is some archaic blue law. But there's another way to look at it that applies to CBDC. So they have a time on Sundays where you can start buying beer. It used to be noon. I think they dropped it recently. You know, some politician somewhere got enough of a spine to say 2 hours probably won't upset the religious people too much. Why you care if I buy a beer when I go to the grocery store at 9 o'clock in the morning? You don't need to drink at 9 o'clock on a Sunday. No, I don't need to drink at 9 o'clock on a Sunday, but maybe while your ass was in church, I went to the grocery store because you weren't in my way. And maybe I'm picking my groceries up for the week and maybe I want to, and it's none of your business anyway, right? But they have that. But here's where I get to the CBDC angle. You show up to the cash register and you put your 12 pack on the belt and it comes up and the girl goes beep. It goes womp. She goes, I can't. There's nothing she can do. You can stand there and wait till the time changes, but it's time locked. The grocery store's system is coded so that you cannot buy the beer during this time frame. They don't lock up the beer. They don't do stupid shit like they do in some states where they turn all the lights out in the beer aisle and put up, you know, like they do that in Arkansas. They turn all the lights off. They put up a rope, like, you know, like a rope at a club or some shit, just so that nobody is confused. Is I think the real reason they do it, like, because a lot of tourists or something are like, I didn't know, right? And then somebody has to put it back. So I think that's why they do it. But they don't do any of that shit in Texas. They just make it impossible for you to buy it. It doesn't matter if the girl at the cash register thinks it's stupid, you think it's stupid, the manager thinks it's stupid. There's no override button. The transaction cannot be processed. Imagine with a CBDC, that would make it where you cannot process a transaction to buy a gun. We've determined you are not trustworthy with a firearm. There's no law that says you can't have a gun. None. You just can't, no gun store can take your money. Walmart can take your money, but if they still have a gun section like some of them do, they can't take it for guns or ammunition. Or your insurance provider has decided that if you buy certain food, your insurance rates are going to go up. That's the push for this. Now, I personally think the amount of it that is going to happen in the United States is deeply mitigated. I do not think we will ever have a true centralized CBDC. I do think there may be some purchase controls, Operation Choke Point 3.9 or whatever, placed on some of the stable coins issued by banking institutions. But I think we'll largely get away from this in the United States. We have too many options. We have too many freedoms. We're too fragmented as a republic. It would take a literal revolution in this country, changing the form of government at its core, to make it feasible to do in the next 20 to 30 years. There's just too much in the way of it. It's not because they wouldn't do it. It's like the Second Amendment and firearms. Firearms would be banned in this country to shit by now without the Second Amendment. But our form of government, our federal republic, states having individual sovereignty, the way the court system works, the way things can be tied up, has prevented that from happening. That's what I think is going to happen for us. But it's still going to have an impact because other nations have an impact on us and their spending and their financial models and things like that. And it may have a real effect on all of these digital nomads that avoid paying tax in the U.S. by living in different countries all the time, right, and working remotely and what have you. It may have a big impact on them because maybe they don't like the country you just were in for 6 months or something like that. There's no real way to know. What's the opportunity here, though? Use alternatives while they're still legal and easy and entrench yourself into them where you have the value of them no matter what they do. In other words, buy Bitcoin. Buy Bitcoin. That's your number one out in this is Bitcoin. Don't buy number. There's no room for number two. This is your future. There is no number two. There's no second best. Buy Bitcoin, hold Bitcoin, and hold it whenever you can. Hold it in private custody where you have full custody on your own. Then the last one is biotechnology and human enhancement. This is one of those like Star Trek level promises that's also based on some very real things. Probably the biggest thing in this that's known, and a lot of this is open source and available, you got biohackers doing it to themselves and what have you, is something called CRISPR. CRISPR and gene editing are moving really fast, and I could do a whole show just on this one technology, and maybe I should, but I want to give you, and my God, what I'm about to give you, I want you to understand, I am so oversimplifying this, and I even have like a 5-minute video you can watch that goes deeper than what I'm going to explain to you in the show notes for you today, but this is basically a form of immune system from bacteria. And what it does is it rewrites genetics, okay? And we've been able to figure out how to take this gene editing tech from bacteria that use it for their own immunodefense and apply it to rewrite our own genes. And again, I'm way oversimplifying what this means, okay? But it's the best way I know to explain it to someone that doesn't understand it at all. Think of it like Control H in Microsoft Word, and a window pops up and it says find and replace. And if you're a person that constantly inverts your E and your I in a specific word, let's say thief, and you've written a chapter in a book and you use thief like 20 times, you probably misspelled it 20 times because that's just a typo you make. You can pull up and put find misspelled thief, replace with properly spelled thief, and hit replace all. It's kind of like that, okay? It's not exactly like that. It's kind of like that. And it's kind of like an active multi-run variant, and the person types all the time. So your body's making new genetic material all the time, okay? So you can't go do it once and be done, because your body will make new genetic material, and if it's a flaw, at least in your opinion or a doctor's opinion or society's opinion, sooner or later it'll churn that shit out again. Eventually it'll become a dominant genetic material in you. So it's having like an active system that intermittently runs command find and replace. And all DNA, right, and it's like a little fragment of RNA looks for these things and grabs onto them and alters them, okay? And then recombines, and I can't get into how, but it recombines them back into full genes. And it's like having that find and replace command. You type 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, and maybe 5 minutes from now, the find and replace command is run. And maybe 15 minutes from now, it's a run again. And then maybe in 1 minute, it's run again, because you have these fragments moving around and doing all this. And so what you know is sooner or later, all of these genes will get edited and re-spliced into this new format, which can enhance ability, right? It can fix problems, birth defects. It can enhance longevity. It can do a lot of good things, and a lot of these things are coming. And it also kind of leads into things like neurotech and brain machine interfaces. Now, I have to tell you, the people that I see on social media going, Elon Musk wants to put a chip in my brain. I'm going to tell you, probably that person that the least interesting thing in the world to Elon Musk right now is you and your brain. He's probably not interested in your brain at all. It doesn't mean that there's no risk there. But right now, when we look at things like neurotech, we're seeing things like, okay, let's make a person who can't walk, walk. I'm all for that. I think that's a great thing. And if I couldn't walk and there was a chip you could put in my brain, it would make me walk again. I don't care how much you want. Jack, they're going to control you. Bitch, I can't wipe my own ass right now. I think I'll take the risk. And the reality is, if you took over the minds of all the paralyzed people in the world and made them walk, you couldn't move a hill of beans toward the New World Order or whatever it is you're afraid of. So being used like that, there's not much risk, but it's a toe in the door. It's a toe in the door. And where I start worrying about this is, as we start seeing the ability to not only, let's say, fix a physical impairment with this technology, but to allow a direct interface with a computer or with an AI unit or group of AI units or suite of AI tools, then you start getting into a point where it's not about fixing an imperfection. It's not about making a deaf person hear with a cochlear implant. It's not about making a blind person see with some sort of Geordi LaForge Star Trek visor, okay? It's not about making a crippled person able to walk. It's not about taking a person who can walk but walks with severe impairment and making them able to walk normal. It's not about taking a person with ALS and preventing them from having a miserable death by creating a computer system that can replace the lost components of their ability to control their body. No, now it's about enhancement. And I'm going to tell you, I'm going to give you an example using my marketing ability to tell you how dangerous it would be. But I want you to think of something, because you might get there before I give it to you, if I just give you one thing to think about. Banning steroids in professional sports because fill in the blank. Why? Why do we want to ban steroids in professional sports? Are we really worried that this dude will have an unfair advantage over this dude? Nobody really cares. If that's where it stopped, let the people that want to be a steroid user do it, and let the people that don't. What's the real reason that this is actually a smart policy? We're not going to have professional athletes using anabolic steroids. Because once you let that be a thing, then the people that use the enhancement exceed the performance of the people who don't, and then what happens? Then everybody else has to do it too. And you become an NBA or an NFL or an MLB of nothing but steroid users, and steroid use becomes the default. That's why. Because you will be unable to compete if you don't use them too. And I don't care about your one-off unicorn guy who's 400 pounds and ripped and he lives on broccoli and tofu and he prays to the Inca gods or whatever and he can like split a tree in half with his left hand. I don't care about the one-off person that can be the best athlete in the world. Without it, in general, in mass, if you allow open use, untested steroids in professional sports, 99% of people in professional sports will be on steroids. And then they'll be forced to take all of the risk that comes with it. Does that make sense? I mean, whether you think it's a good thing or a bad thing, does it make sense that that would happen? Okay, now here's my marketing thing for you. It's 10 years from now. Neuralink type technology has become a thing. It's everywhere. You can go to your doctor's office for $1,000 and a small monthly subscription and have a chip planted in your body. And it allows you to interact with AI units like Gemini, Claude, and ChatGPT simultaneously. It allows you to enact
an interface with them at any time you want by asking a question in your mind where you hear it in your own voice like an internal dialogue, and you address the question, and the unit that has the best answer, because they talk to each other and agree, starts to give you an answer while they talk with their own independent agents between each other. And you hear your AI unit talking to you in whatever voice you prefer, even though nobody around you does. I know a lot of you are scared, but wait for the advertisement that comes with this and see where it goes, okay? So you start hearing all this shit, and maybe it's in like in a sexy British chick voice like Siri had when she started. Whatever you like, right? The way you would handle that, Jack, is you would blah, 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 right? And you have that ability now. Now here's the commercial. Here's the commercial for it. There's a board meeting. Bob and Tom are sitting in front of their boss. And Bob and Tom's boss comes up with some really complicated shit the company's trying to solve. And it switches to where you hear the internal dialogue of Bob and Tom. And you hear Bob asking himself, what do I do? He expects an answer. I don't have an answer. This seems impossible to solve. Maybe we could do this, but if we did this, then this would happen, and blah, 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 blah. And that goes on for about 15 seconds. And then the camera just pans over to Tom. And Tom goes, how can we handle this situation? What are five good ways to go at this problem? And you hear, well, Tom, what you could do is this, 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 or this. And then Tom, while his boss is still waiting for an answer and grilling Bob, says, expand idea number three for me. But he doesn't say it. He just thinks it. And it expands it. And then the boss turns to Tom, and Tom goes, what we could do is this. And then it just comes up and says, do you want to be Bob or Tom? Neuralink. Talk to your doctor today. Do you see how fucking scary that is? Now, you guys that are worried about AI, I'm not worried about AI. I'm worried about that. If I can influence the way you think, now I've got something. No matter how much you use AI, unless you're an idiot and you forget that it's just a computer and you're in charge, you're in charge. If it can talk into your brain. And if we create a system where the people with – because right now, I'm already telling you the AI advantage is something you can't ignore. You have to learn to use this, or it's going to freaking run you over flat dead. If you have 30 years of your career left and you don't learn how to use AI and you're doing something other than bending pipes or conduit and putting them over a header in a building, if you're sitting in a desk, if you're behind a computer and you're not using AI, if you don't learn this, you might not have a job in 2 years, let alone 10. I'm serious. But that's okay. That doesn't scare me. This, if this happens, that scares me. And it's seductive, isn't it? Imagine having the ability to communicate at speed, at light speed, with your brain, with all the knowledge in the known universe. The problem is who controls the input. Whoever controls the input also controls the output, by the way. So this is something to really, really watch. There's moral and job implications that stack up in this. But what's the opportunity? If you position yourself the right way in new health, longevity, bioskills, et cetera, and some of the stuff in this genetic realignment is really necessary because our health is dog shit. But the easiest hack isn't some open source CRISPR shit. It isn't some thing that you fabricate and implant yourself with, or a chip that you get from a company, right? Because that will be the other what happened as soon as AI came out and people were worried about who controls the AI? People started spinning up their own AI units, training their own AI units. People started setting up basically server class equipment under their desk, and that's their AI tool. And they control it. So they're not afraid of it. People will do that with this technology as well. But one of the best hacks we have is simply to eat ancestrally appropriate food. You know what's not ancestrally appropriate food? White rice, bleached flour, low-protein wheat, which is what all the wheat is today, even the organic stuff. Like just fabricated seed oils, color dyes, like If you think about it, this is not me going health nut Jack Spirico, okay, or all carnivore Jack Spirico. So I'm like, if you just think about it from a perspective of how many things that we consume that no one consumed 200 years ago, let alone 2000. No one. It didn't exist. That are things that everybody that looks at it goes, probably not the best thing for health. Even the ones we go, that's not that big. You know, okay, is it optimum? No, but it's probably not that big of a deal. But when you put 100 of them together and they become the default, it can't help but jack up your health. And a lot of the obesity and other health problems we have today are what we call epigenetic problems. And so they actually are altering the genetics, but above the baseline genetics, so that your body is now performing in a way that it is still your genetics, but your genetics were not faulty until you added the toxins. And so simply by picking a good diet, right? And I've always been the person like, this is what I figured out worked for me. What I figured out worked for me was almost carnivore. Ketovore, I guess. That's as far as I'm willing to go. And I do, sometimes I might go a week and be all carnivore. But in the end, I'm going to eat vegetables. I'm going to eat a little bit of fruit. I'm going to eat some things. Occasionally, I'm going to eat a fucking roll and kiss my ass if you don't like it. But it's going to be like, I'll eat a roll less frequently than the person who says they minimize desserts eats cake. Okay? But if it was primal, if it's paleo, if it's all natural, if it's whole food only, no red dye number 6, no freaking soybean oil. If it requires refining and significant processing, I don't eat it. Notice I didn't say no processing because sausage is processed. You know what I mean? Highly processed, industrial processed. Just that alone can reset your genetics to at least the baseload. And there's a lot of opportunity in that space, longevity, bioskills markets. People are going to be interested in this. Even the ones that use technology are going to also want to align their diets and their lifestyles. And there's opportunities as professional, you know, coaches and guides through that. People running businesses that cater to that, like local on-farm restaurants. There's going to be a ton of opportunity in all types of things like that. Again, going back to AI as being kind of the crux of all this, if you don't know how you can break into those spaces, ask AI for help. Ask AI for ideas. Try 100 ideas. Run them through the grinder and see what comes out the other side and find the ones with the most actionable things as far as I can do this, I want to do this, and I have the opportunity to do this, and I'm willing to put the work in to get it done. And that's in any of these opportunities I brought up. In the end, you don't need to focus on all this. You don't. But I'll tell you what you do need to do. You need to be aware of all of it and more. This could have had 20 technological shifts and social shifts that are coming easily. It just would have ended up being a super long show. And it's already longer than I wanted it to be. But you need to be aware. That doesn't mean you need to have all the information about all the things and focused on it, but you just need to be aware of these things and pay attention to what's going on in their spaces because they're going to affect you whether you realize it or not. You need to focus on the parts that will most affect you the most, though, right? So you need to be aware, general awareness, and if you're in a job, let me put it to you this way. If you have an office job and no one works for you, and you work for someone specifically, you have somebody you directly report to, and you're one of five underneath that person, there's a very good chance that you look at you're one of five, like a board, right? And there's two of five, three of five, four of five, and five of five, that significant numbers of your collective will not be there in 2 years, let alone five. So you either need to move up to somewhere where you have those direct reports. So as they go away, you absorb the responsibilities with an AI suite, or you need to become indispensable so that you're one of the few left in the board collective that gets to stay. That is totally different than if your job is you're out installing sprinkler systems. And it's totally different than if you're a guy that welds things. But there's still going to be components of that. They're going to be like machining. They're going to be done by AI. You might even be doing the work, but the planning, the development will be done by AI. This is going to infiltrate everything. It won't replace everything, but it'll be in everything. It's already being integrated in everything. It's replacing search because it's built into search. It's running your freaking phone now. Like, if you think you can be a Luddite and go back to the way it was in 1960 or something, good luck with it, unless, you know, you can't ignore it and not get hurt if you have any of your career left in front of you. If you expect that you will still be working in 5 and 10 years, you better pay attention to this. If you are on a track where, unless a meteor hits the earth and destroys all of humanity like we're the new dinosaurs, if you're on a track right now within 5 years, that's you, and you will be, I am done, I am out, I am retired, I quit. And you have your financial planning done in a way where you can fail by 50% of your plan and you're still going to be okay. You can take all this shit and other, you just look at it like the Weather Channel. That's nice that that's happened over there. And, oh, we got a storm coming here. I think I'll go visit my cousin. That way I won't be here when the storm gets here. It sucks, but I got insurance on the house. You can be that person if you're at that point in your life. If you're 25, 35 years old right now and you ignore this shit, especially if you're 35. Let me tell you what's going to happen to people who are 35. 45 is where you should have really, whatever you were going to accomplish as far as moving up, you're there or you're close to your peak. 45 is when you've got 20 years of experience behind you, good, relevant experience. 45, and you still have 10, 15 good years left in you, right? As long as you're where you need to be at 45. If you're at 45 and you're 5 years behind in your space from where you should be, you're duck shit. That's true right now. If I have to invest in you at 45, I'm not doing it. I don't get enough out of you for that. Employees already come and go way faster than they used to. No more gold watches and whatever. But there's always the chance that if I find a rock star that's 30 years old and I give him an opportunity, 15 years from now, he's going to be running a division for me. And that's great. If you're 45, I already know you're not doing that. 15 years from now, you're going to be 60. You're going to be thinking about early Social Security. You ain't going to have the energy and the drive of a 45-year-old, which is where that 30-year-old will be in 15 years, is where you are now, except you're not ready and he is. You're gone. The younger you are, the more time you have, right, to live, but also to adapt. The people that are in that 25 to 40-year, 45-year range right now, you either grab this and differentiate yourself with it, or you design your life in a way that it doesn't impact you the way it does the average person. But I'll ask you this. Who do you report to and who reports to you? That's the first step in figuring out how much this is going to impact you. If nobody reports to you, there's not a lot for you to absorb. If you're the marketing person in a small company and you're a department of one, you're probably good. You're going to be a rock star with this stuff. If you're the marketing department in a mid-sized company and there's 12 people in your department and there's two bosses and you ain't one of them, there's a good chance of you being eliminated. Sorry. Just the way it is. It's just the way it is. We all have our own challenges to bear, right? But that's the big ones. Just real quick, rehashing them. Back to the beginning, if this damn computer over here will let me do what I'm trying. The death of the 40-hour job, AI disruption of white-collar work, the collapse of traditional education, decentralized energy, supply chain fracturing, de-dollarization and global economic realignment, central bank digital currency push, biotechnology and human enhancement. These are the big shifts. These are all massive shifts. And well, I don't know what Timothy says AI is going to make things dicey. AI is going to make things better if you learn how to use it. And if you don't, it's going to dice you. I'm sorry. I don't care if you don't like it. I'll finish up with it. I just watched a video. I think it was last week. It was Gary Vaynerchuk's video. And I really do like him. He certainly stayed true to the ethos of who he is for, you know, 20 years now. And I appreciate that consistency out of a person. And he's been talking a lot about AI. And it was basically a video of him speaking on AI at some event somewhere, you know. And they would show 2 or 3 minutes of him talking. And then they would, like, they montaged it. So it would leave his talk and would go him walking through the event after talking and speaking to people. And they would tell him how they're using AI. And he'd be like, that's really great, whatever, yeah. And then he would go back to him talking, and then it'd be another little mini discussion thing. And it was kind of a cool way that they montaged the video together. The very end, it looks like it's over, and then it fades back in. And he's walking out the back of the place, and there's a guy that says to him, Gary, that was a great talk. It really was, and I think you're right about a lot of things, but I'm still scared as hell of AI. And Gary just says to him something like, well, tough fucking shit, and that ended the video. That's the reality. It doesn't matter that you're scared. It doesn't matter that you think it shouldn't have happened. It doesn't matter that you think that it's bad. It doesn't matter that you think it's going to take away the human touch or whatever you fill the blank in with. It doesn't matter. It's going to happen anyway. And you either figure out how to deal with it or you get run over by it. And that's true of all these situations. It's just AI is going to play a critical role in driving them all. Is this the threat that we expected to see to humanity 15 years ago, 17 years ago when the show started? No, we thought it would be inflation or a real pandemic, not the bullshit from 5 years ago. Life seldom works out the way that you had planned, or no battle plan survives contact with the enemy. But once you contact the enemy, what do? You build a new plan and you fall back to redundancies. That's what it's time to do here. With that, let's go ahead and wrap up. You know, I do love technology. I really do. And I do think technology makes our lives better. And one of the technologies I myself was pretty resistant to when I first heard about it, and like most people that resist the technology, because I didn't really know what it was, is sous vide cooking. It's a super simple technology. It's a precision temperature controller and circulator. You stick it in a bowl or a pot of water and say, I want this water to be heated to a temperature of 135 degrees Fahrenheit and held there plus or minus 1 degree until I tell you otherwise. Then you take something like a steak and you season it and you put it in a vacuum sealed bag and you suck the air out of it so you get good contact and you stick it in the water. Now, why would you do this? Because that steak will cook to the exact temperature that you set it to, getting it to the exact temperature you want it to, and it can be cooked too long, start break down texture and things like that if you go stupid, but it will not, cannot, absolutely impossible to cook it to a temperature higher than you wanted it to be. If you set it to 130, it will go to 130 and it will stay there, and that will give you some room when you sear it so that you don't carry over the temperature too high, right? And then when you're done, you don't have to wait for it to rest very long because it didn't go much higher than you wanted it. It's really a great way to do things, and it does a lot of other things too. Well, the reason I bring all this up is the Onova Sous Vide Nano is on sale today for $69. That is a deal. It doesn't get cheaper. The last time it was on sale this cheap was over a year ago. They had it on sale a couple months ago for about $78. I ran it then. It was up for a couple days, and it went back up there, down for a couple days, and went back up in price. It's the lowest I've seen it. I don't know if they have some surplus inventory or whatever, but I've been thinking about getting an extra one because 2 is 1, 1 is none. And sometimes you want to run 2 at different temperatures for reasons. And so I've done this before. So I went and ordered one of these this morning myself to have an extra sous vide backup circulator. But if you've been wanting to get into the sous vide circulator game, this is the one to pick up. And the price today, it just doesn't get. If it did, would it really matter? Like, if it somehow went to like $62, would you be like, damn, I lost $7? No, you're not going to care, especially if you've cooked 15 steaks for it at that point. There's a kind of a floor to pricing on some things like this, and it's sitting right there about the floor. I haven't seen this particular model for any less than this ever using a PriceWatch tool. So consider picking it up. And remember, you can always help support us by doing your online shopping at tspaz.com. One more thing today, if you have not picked up a copy of Laws of Life, please consider doing so. Laws of Life, Ditch the System, Design Your Life. It is a great book to hand to a young person and tell them, hey, if you want the things that you say you want in life, this is how one man got it for himself. Maybe you can learn something from the way that he got there. This is not what to do or what to think. It's how to think and how to put those thoughts into actions in a way that builds your life into a better place, no matter what it is that you want out of it. It doesn't place, you know, moral judgments on you other than if you're late, you're wrong, right? But it doesn't really say, like, you should go into this field or you should go into that field or this is the future and this isn't. It doesn't matter what you want to do. It matters how you go about getting what you want. That's what Laws of Life is. With that, I'll wrap up. Thank you to everybody that tuned in today. Tomorrow, tune in early, 9:30 Central Standard Time, because it is first Tuesday of the month, August the 1st, one day before my birthday. And that means I will be on with two of my favorite people early on a live stream, John Willis of SOE Tactical Gear and Nicole Sauce of Living Free in Tennessee. So tune in tomorrow for that, and it will be, as always, a hell of a fun day. Take care, guys. Catch you tomorrow. Run you round. They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way. You don't have to be another face in the crowd. Revolution.